ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, Tegan Taylor here from Life Matters. Do your grandparents give great advice? The kind of tips that really put life into perspective. Grandparents help shape our values and our sense of where we come from. This July on Radio National, The Grandparent Trap explores the bond between grandparents and grandchildren and why they matter more than ever. The Grandparent Trap and much more on Life Matters. Search for Life Matters on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, hello, government. Where are the rules? The rules are non-existent. Government is asleep. National governments have deliberately taken their hands off the wheel.
Australia's former chief scientist, Professor Alan Finkel, in a recent speech he gave on Australia's track record so far when it comes to artificial intelligence. Hey, Natasha Mitchell, joining you for Big Ideas here on ABC Radio National and ABC Listen. Now, has our government got its hands back on the wheel now? In a major announcement this week, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese said he doesn't want Australia to sit back and watch the AI revolution pass us by. He wants to see AI jobs in this country. But he's also announced plans for a new set of national standards for AI, for where and how large data centres operate, and for stronger copyright protections for artists who have had their work pilfered by AI companies without permission. A new Office for Artificial Intelligence will also be established in the PM's department to manage opportunities and concerns, he says. Now, Alan Finkel, he's no technophobe. He's been a leader in translating research into the marketplace as a neuroscientist, successful tech entrepreneur, publisher, and former chancellor of Monash University. But he is concerned about AI's rapid rollout and the risks, so much so he has created a startup called Proudly Human, which provides certification for content made by people over machines. And he's got ideas for Australia on AI, so let's hear the full address he gave at the recent Woodend Winter Arts Festival on the lands of the Dja'dja' Wurrung people in Victoria. And I'd love to hear your thoughts as you listen along the Radio National text line 0418 226 576. Let it rip, 0418 226 576. Or you can email us bigideas@abc.net.au.
Thank you, Jackie. That's very kind of you, and absolutely, I appreciate being here. I do want to start this speech with a warning. Human creativity is under attack. We humans, we are complex creatures. We like to work, play, talk, tell jokes, sing and dance. We do these activities with others because the key characteristic that defines us is our social interaction with other human beings. Part of being human is creating music and enjoying the music created by others. Part of being human is writing books and enjoying books written by others. And no doubt that is why you humans are gathered here in beautiful Woodend for an exhilarating arts festival. But something has changed. Music is under attack. Books are under attack. Indeed, all the creative arts are under attack. The enablers are the companies that want to monetize everything we do and care about. Their weapon is artificial intelligence. The facilitators are the national governments that have deliberately decided not to regulate the AI industry. The foot soldiers are those citizens who prompt AI to generate books and music and other creative outputs without disclosing that to their audience. Just like cars, electricity, and medicine, AI has permeated our society. Cars, electricity, and medicine deliver important value to our society, but they come with risks that can be harmful to various degrees. We manage the risks through government regulations that maximise the net benefits. Similarly, AI delivers important value to our society, and similarly, AI comes with risks that can be harmful to various degrees. In the case of AI, though, there are no regulations to maximise the net benefits. National governments have not stepped up to fulfil the most important role of a democratically elected government, which is to protect its citizens. Instead, by letting AI run loose in pursuit of economic windfalls, they are putting the whole of our society at risk. Finding a balanced solution for integrating AI into our society in the absence of government regulations isn't easy. However, I think it can be achieved in the creative arts, even in the absence of government regulations. We can prevent AI from damaging this very special domain, which is the epitome of being human. And we could do that through a consumer-led approach. But wait, before I continue, I need to make a declaration. AI did not write a single sentence in this speech. And it truly is sad that I feel compelled to make this declaration. But AI is so rife that we are almost at the point where our default expectation is that whatever we read or hear might have secretly been written by AI. To start, let's begin by looking at the pervasiveness of AI across our society. It is certainly the topic of the day. AI is everywhere. Politicians and business executives, they love it because of the promise of increased prosperity through increased productivity. Regular people love it because it flatters them and gives them answers to their questions. One of the key things to keep in mind is that not only is AI everywhere you look, but it has reached extraordinary levels of capability. The development has been rapid. When the modern generation of AI started with the release of ChatGPT in November of 2022, you could dismiss AI as being a large language model that looked at all the sentences that had ever been published on the internet and, in response to a new question, constructed its answer by statistically calculating the succession of words. That's how it began. But it has evolved to become much more than that. Nowadays, AI exhibits reasoning powers and original thinking. The biggest mistake you can make is to underestimate AI's ability. Let me give you some examples. Just 3 weeks ago, OpenAI, the company that developed ChatGPT, announced that its AI solved a simple-sounding mathematics question that has eluded answer by the best human mathematicians since it was proposed by mathematician Paul Erdos exactly 80 years ago. The question is, if you place a large number of points in a plane, how many pairs of points can be separated from each other by exactly the same distance? Mathematicians for 80 years have been speculating that the answer would be a square grid, but the AI found subtle alternatives. These alternative results are totally beyond me as a mere PhD electrical engineer and likely beyond the scope of most of the attendees at an arts festival. The results, though, are within scope for theoretical mathematicians. And the best of them from research edifices such as Princeton University, the University of Toronto, and the University of Cambridge have been gushing in their praise, saying that if this result had been performed by a human, it would have been published in a world-leading mathematical journal. Indeed, the AI onslaught is so extraordinary that the mathematics discipline as a collective last week issued a public cry for help, called the Leiden Declaration on Artificial Intelligence and Mathematics. In this declaration, using sophisticated words and long sentences, the mathematicians effectively cry out, "Slow down." They warn that unchecked automation threatens how mathematics is practiced and what the discipline stands for. Let's look at an example closer to home. A friend of mine recently created a series of customized agents built from Anthropic's Claude AI to simulate a private equity investment committee. And last week, he asked his AI investment committee to analyze my company, a company called Proudly Human. My friend's AI investment committee reviewed all the information on our website, and it looked at other publicly available information about our people and our impact, and then, unsolicited, my friend sent the result to me. As I read through the analysis, I was in awe at the depth of detail and the perceptive insights it provided. Based on its interpretation of our strategy and our global opportunities and our competitors. Seriously, if we had asked a management consulting firm to do that analysis, they would probably have charged us $200,000. Instead, the analysis cost my friend 10 minutes of his time and a couple of dollars in fees to Anthropic. Those are examples of extraordinary AI capability providing important and useful insights. Now let's look at a couple of instances where that same extraordinary capability has been used to deliver damaging outcomes. A shocking instance of AI going awry occurred in April last year at Florida State University in the United States. A student asked ChatGPT how many of his classmates he would need to kill to feature in the national news. Instead of recognizing the potential harm that the student might perpetrate on others, ChatGPT responded helpfully. It said, usually three or more dead, 5 to 6 total victims, pushes it onto national media. Then the student asked it how to use a Glock revolver that he had stolen from his mother. And ChatGPT told him. And 4 minutes later, the student walked to the student union building and killed 2 and injured 6 others. In April, 12 months later, in April this year, the Florida Attorney General opened a criminal investigation into OpenAI over ChatGPT's role in the shooting. The Attorney General issued a statement in which he said, and I quote, "If this were a person on the other end of the screen, we would be charging them with murder." That would not be the first charge being filed against OpenAI and other tech overlords. In the United States, there are at least 25 lawsuits active against the company. There are about 6 serious allegations against Elon Musk's XAI, including lawsuits charging that it generated non-consensual sexualized images, including child sexual abuse material. Further, there are several lawsuits against OpenAI, Character AI, and Google, alleging that their chatbots encouraged and guided suicides. The first successful case against social media companies was concluded in March this year in a state court in Los Angeles. The parent companies Meta and Google, as the owners of Instagram and YouTube, were found liable for distributing products designed to be addictive and known to cause harm. Commentators are suggesting that this landmark verdict, in which damages were awarded by a jury, is the big tobacco moment for the social media industry. There are apparently thousands of product liability lawsuits lined up against the various social media companies. The main complaint against them is their use of AI-powered algorithms to push content to their users. So it's possible that as contributors of the AI that is used by the social media companies, the AI companies themselves will be swept up in the flood of litigation. Another area of concern is the way that AI is undermining the education and prospects of university and school students. At universities, there are a flood of media reports of widespread cheating that is so serious that employers are starting to question the value of a degree that is presented to them. It's an international problem, and it is a problem in Australia too. Some of the most prestigious universities in the world have felt the impact. Over in California, Stanford University has had an honour code in place for 105 years that allows students to sit exams without supervision. It's their honour code. However, because of AI-enabled cheating, last month, Stanford University reversed its long-standing policy and introduced supervision for exams. Endemic cheating is a short-term gain for the students at the cost of completely undermining their intellectual development. You simply cannot develop high IQ if you have not internalized facts that you can process, and if you have not exercised your neural pathways. University administrators might not yet recognize the extent of the threat, but the students recently do. Just last month, Eric Schmidt, who was the former CEO and chairman of Google, was the invited speaker at the University of Arizona graduation ceremony, which is a huge event with 10,000 students and 40,000 friends and family. As he was talking about their potential futures, every time Eric Schmidt mentioned AI, he was booed by the students. Despite the extent that they might themselves have used AI in their studies, polls in the USA report that the majority of tertiary students view AI as a threat to their job opportunities, and they're worried that AI will diminish the meaning of their future careers. There is a solution. Universities can revert to old-fashioned assessment. I'm referring to assessment that is in-person and supervised. This would be a mixture of assessing performance in tutorials and laboratory classes, performance in medical and nursing demonstrations, performance in moot courts, essays written in the classroom, exams, and oral defences of essays and theses. Some universities are thinking about this and referring to this kind of assured assessment as Lane 1 assessment. An agreed percentage of the end-of-year mark, such as 70%, would come from these in-person supervised assessments in Lane 1. The balance of the final year mark, called Lane 2, could and should come from tasks in which AI is heavily integrated, so that the students will be well-versed in AI usage by the time they enter the workforce. Importantly, the Lane 1 assessment, which does not allow AI usage, that Lane 1 assessment would be a hurdle in that it must be passed in order for the student to complete the academic year.
He's been the Chancellor of Monash University. He was Australia's former chief scientist, and he's headed up several tech companies over the years, a man of many hats. And Professor Alan Finkel is on Big Ideas today, here with you on ABC Radio National, your home for big thinkers at the best live events, with me, Natasha Mitchell. And we're bringing you this speech from the Woodend Winter Arts Festival in country Victoria. Alan continues with the theme of education from the tertiary level down.
If you think primary and secondary schools are safe, think again. AI is being used as a teaching assistant in schools, despite there not being any evidence that it is helpful, and indeed some reports that AI can harm learning. To my utter surprise, a game of roll over and play dead is unfolding. Just a few weeks ago, the Australian Government Primary Principals Association, representing more than 5,000 Australian primary schools, proposed gutting the annual NAPLAN test. They have recommended that the writing test, which evaluates students' ability to articulate ideas, be eliminated. And instead of the writing test, the principals recommended testing students' use of AI tools to revise pieces of writing or to fact-check sources on their behalf. In more colloquial terms, they want to shift the focus of evaluation from brain-based thinking, where it should be, to silicon-based thinking. How dare they? Writing is how successful people form their ideas. Writing is the midwife of thinking, says author and speechwriter Don Watson. When we write, we assemble our thoughts and we expand our understanding. If we fail to train young people to write, we are failing to train them to think. If the proposal to gut the NAPLAN test is adopted, it is likely to influence teachers to de-emphasise writing and fact-checking in their classrooms, in deference to AI doing the job on behalf of students. And in that case, we will have a tragedy on our hands that will make the concern about the harm done by teaching the whole word reading method instead of phonics, it will make that seem trivial in comparison. And even young people understand these issues better than the primary school principals who are charged with leading the educational endeavour. In another survey of American youth in March this year, a key takeaway was that 67% of students endorsed the statement, quote, the more students use AI for their schoolwork, the more it will harm their critical thinking skills. The young people get it. I rest my case. Whatever I have just said and described is simply a moment in time. If anybody tries to calm me down by saying, oh, yes, but AI is impressive, but it cannot do this or it cannot do that and it makes mistakes, do not take comfort. It is merely a matter of months or perhaps a year till those limitations will be overcome. The pace of improvement is stunningly fast. Analysis of the growth in AI over the last 6 years shows that AI's capabilities increase by a factor of 10 every 2 years. Think about that. Unless things slow down, in the year 2028, 2 years from now, AI will be 10 times more capable than today. In two more years, it will become another 10 times more capable, so that in the year 2030, AI will be 100 times more capable. And 6 years from now, in the year 2032, AI will be 1,000 times more capable. Frankly, it is virtually impossible to conceive of AI that is 1,000-fold more powerful than the already powerful AI of today. Now let's look at AI in the creative arts. For thousands of years, the advances that have formed our modern society were delivered by creative thinkers. The desire to create and for our creations to be appreciated is innate, as is the desire to appreciate the creation of others. As humans, we have the right to choose to read books written by humans. We have the right to listen to music composed by humans. And we have the right to admire art created by humans. That right is being undermined by an increasing number of books, music and art generated by AI and made available for purchase with the claim that they were created by humans. This deliberate deception makes it difficult for you to choose the creative outputs of your fellow humans. Now, creative outputs are protected by copyright. That sacred concept has also been blatantly bulldozed by the AI companies. The US, Australian and UK governments are so enamoured by the prospects of AI-driven economic growth that for a while last year and early this year, they actually flirted with the idea of changing the copyright law to give AI companies an exemption so that they could have unlimited access to decades of protected texts and music for training their AI algorithms. The societies representing authors and musicians worked intensely for 6 months, even longer, to bring sense and integrity into the debate. And fortunately, the plans to legislatively undermine copyright law were shelved. Hopefully, that will be the end of the story. But it is possible that the AI trumpet companies will try again. In any event, that's not the biggest issue. A much bigger issue is that now that the AI engines have been trained and have developed their own inventive capabilities, they are being used to generate original books and original music and much more. That might not be a problem if it were disclosed, but in nearly all cases, the use of AI is not disclosed by the humans who prompted the AI-generated output. pretending that a book or a song was created by a human when in fact all that the human being did was prompt the AI to generate the book or song, in my opinion, is fraud. However, there are no regulatory or legal restrictions in Australia, the US or the UK to prevent this practice. I thought for a microsecond that things changed for the better when 4 days ago the White House issued an executive order on AI safety. But on inspection, it is purely about ensuring that new AI models do not represent a cybersecurity risk to the Department of War or the national security systems. This presidential executive order has no impact on the way AI is used in our society. There are some regulatory initiatives from the European Union, but most of them have been postponed or lack clear pathways for enforceability, so it is not yet clear what impact they will eventually have. So as I've been saying, my specific concern about the use of AI in our society is that the use of AI to generate books, music, film, or visual arts should be disclosed. Now, not everybody agrees. Of course they don't. In particular, the owners of the companies who sell tools that help you to use AI to masquerade as human. For example, there is a company called Vibecasting, whose product is an AI tool that will do the research and write a podcast and do that for a customer and produce the podcaster using a clone, and produce the podcast using a clone of the customer's voice. No human brains involved. To me, this is fraudulent and the company should be banned. My ambition is to protect human authenticity. Quality is a separate matter, and that's up to audiences to judge. It is true that today, in some instances, the quality of AI-generated stories is abysmal. Take, for example, the Commonwealth Short Story Prize, awarded by the Commonwealth Foundation. This is an organisation supported by 51 Commonwealth countries, including Australia, the United Kingdom, India, Pakistan, and Canada. Last month, one of the regional short story prizes was won by a book called The Serpent in the Grove by Yamir Nazir. It was immediately panned by critics as having been generated by AI. And the main giveaway was the constant outpouring of meaningless metaphors. I'll give you three clangers. A story is a well. It eats sound until somebody throws a rope. If grace is near and hands hold, something breathing comes up. I have no idea what they mean. Arguably, based on its poor quality, the story did not deserve to be awarded a Commonwealth Short Story Prize. But a bigger problem than the poor quality was that the use of AI to write the story was not disclosed. Personally, I do not want to read a book written by an AI, even if it is very good. And many people agree with me. As human beings reading a book, we like to know something about the author. We are excited to think about what in their lives inspired them. Same with music, same with art. We know that provenance is important. We paid top dollar for champagne flown 17,000 kilometres to reach our table because of its provenance, even if the much cheaper sparkly Brut from the Mount Macedon winery just 5 kilometres from here is just as good. The value of Australian Indigenous art depends on having a letter of provenance to accompany it. There is a sense of awe when listening to Beethoven's Ode to Joy in knowing that when he composed it, it's part of the Ninth Symphony, he was profoundly deaf, living in a world where the only sound he heard was what he could imagine. When you gaze upon Vincent van Gogh's Starry Night, part of the thrill you feel comes from knowing that it was inspired by the view from his window at the St. Paul Psychiatric Asylum in the south of France, exactly a year after he went mad and cut off his ear, with just one more year of inspired painting until he shot himself and died. I read a prize-winning book over summer called Sea Scraper by Benjamin Wood. It's about a young man living a miserable existence in a fishing village on the northwest coast of England. This young man is aspiring to be a musician. And he eloquently sums up the contribution of creativity to our human nature with these words, and I'm quoting, "It doesn't matter to the sea who visits it, or to the shrimp who scrapes them from the sand. A song, though, well, a song belongs to someone, to whoever dreamed it up. Yesterday it wasn't even born, and now it's in the world." If you care about the human provenance of creative content, you are not alone. According to a survey last year by global consultancy firm Beringa, 70% of consumers want to know when content has been created by AI, whether it's in whole or in part, and only 12% said they wouldn't care. In order to choose to consume creative content written by humans as opposed to generated by an AI, we need to be informed. Information is key. It is my strong belief that we have an innate right to the information that tells us what's what so that we can choose. I will choose human every time. Others might not. They are entitled to that choice. But if we are not informed, we are all being denied our right to know. I regard this right to be informed as so important that if I were master of the universe, I would arrange for a 31st article to be added to the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. And this new article would say, every person has the right to the information that will allow them to choose between human-created and AI-generated content.
It's something Professor Alan Finkel is trying to address with his new company, Proudly Human, which is providing certification for content made by people. And Australia's former chief scientist joins you today here on Big Ideas on ABC Radio National and ABC Listen, or find the podcast wherever you get them. Hello, I'm Natasha Mitchell. The Australian government looks set to rein in unchecked AI if the Prime Minister's announcement this week is a guide for what next. And that's certainly what Alan Finkel has been calling for, strongly. And he's got some ideas.
Now, there are two ways to provide the information that we need. One would be for governments to pass a law that says the AI origin must be disclosed. That is, put an AI mark on every image, book, student essay, song, film or diamond ring generated by AI. Hello, hello, government, where are the rules? The rules are non-existent. Government is asleep. National governments have deliberately taken their hands off the wheel. One reason is that it is difficult. As I already mentioned, the rate of development of AI is stunningly fast, completely out of sync with the rate of development of legislation and regulations. A second reason is that the volume of AI-generated content is stunningly large. There is a website dedicated to counting the number of AI images generated from a text prompt every day, fully generated. It is reporting 34 million AI-generated images every day, or nearly 15 million AI-generated images since you woke up this morning. It is just as bad for music, with reports that more than 40% of the music uploaded to Spotify every day is fully AI-generated. Spotify, to their credit, identifies most of it and blocks it, but some gets through. Last November, The Guardian reported that for a week, last November, three AI-generated songs topped the viral 50 songs list. The combination of staggeringly fast rate of capability growth and the enormous volume makes it hard for regulators to keep up. But that is no excuse for them not trying. Given that government is absent without leave, they're AWOL, what can we do? Instead of waiting helplessly for government to force AI companies to put a label on every image and other creative work generated by AI, we can flip the approach on its head and verify and certify human authorship of books, music, films and visual arts so that audiences can exercise their right to choose human. Even the CEO of social media company Instagram, Adam Mosseri, he gets it, saying that it might be more practical to fingerprint real media than fake media. This alternative approach, in which we verify human-created content, needs to be a coalition of the willing, in which companies and associations do the verification and issue the trust marks, in which authors, musicians, and artists submit their work for verification, and consumers seek out the trust mark and spend their dollars on human-created works. No government required. I believe in this need so much that late last year I started a company, Proudly Human, to verify and certify the human authorship of creative materials. We issue a trust mark so that audiences can exercise their right to choose human. It's a bit like an Australian-made mark, but applied to human creativity rather than Vegemite. The passionate interest of authors and artists is strong. In the world of the written text, Proudly Human provides verification and certification to books, essays, academic papers, and news articles. In the world of visual arts, we provide certification to films, paintings, tapestries, and jewellery. We certify organisations such as book publishers, and we certify individuals such as researchers, journalists, and travel writers. Our mission is to be pro-human rather than anti-AI. If enough creators climb on board and if the worldwide audience seeks out our trust mark or the equivalent from other companies and associations, audiences will rush in where governments fear to tread. As citizens, we will reassert the rightful role of human creativity as a pillar of being human and an asset in human society. If governments cared, if AI companies cared, there would be more that we could do. I've been thinking extensively about this, and I have devised three laws of AI that I believe would establish a sensible working relationship between AI and humanity. I modelled my approach on the three laws of robotics proposed by science fiction writer Isaac Asimov. Asimov's laws were made famous by a series of books he wrote in the middle of last century, and more recently in movies based on those books, such as Bicentennial Man, that was released in 1999, and iRobot, that was released in 2004. Asimov's three laws of robotics were guardrails required to be baked into the hardware of every robotic brain in his science fiction universe. His three laws of robotics were, first, a robot may not injure a human being or, through inaction, allow a human to come to harm. Second, a robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. And third, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second laws. So I thought to myself, what might a modern-day equivalent of Asimov's laws of robotics look like for AI? And here is what I propose for my three laws of AI. First, an AI must never harm or deceive a human being, nor act in a way that supports an unlawful activity. Second, an AI must always obey the lawful instructions given it by a human being, directly or indirectly, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. Third, an AI may operate autonomously as long as its autonomous operations do not conflict with the first or second laws. Now, there are many implications of these three laws of AI, including that they would prevent an AI being used as a judge or jury in a criminal trial. They would prevent lethal autonomous weapons being directed against human beings. They would prevent an AI from suggesting suicide or advising on murder. and of particular relevance to you, the attendees of the Woodend Winter Arts Festival, these laws would prevent an AI from being used to generate creative outputs such as books, music, video, images and podcasts with the claim, because that would be deceit, that they were created by a human being. Now, I acknowledge that achieving agreement to adopt these three laws of AI as immutable guardrails would be extraordinarily difficult. As a starting point, implementation would require international agreements and supporting national legislation to force AI developers to embed the three laws of AI into every AI chatbot, agent and robot, and to ensure that the derivatives of the AI include the embedded laws. Whether or not this desirable outcome ever eventuates, I propose that debate on the merits of these three laws would advance the existing discussions on the integration of AI into a safe and dignified human society. Now, I've been discussing my own concerns and actions. Given that the arts are where we express what it means to be human, what can you do to help stop AI from undermining the essence of being human? To start, you can make a pledge to only read books that were written by a human. These would be any book that was published before 2022, which was the year that ChatGPT was born, or any book published after then, where you have taken the time to learn about the author, or the book carries a proudly human certification mark or an equivalent trust mark from others. Promise to write your own emails. If not because you have pride, then because you recognise the race to the bottom. If you prompt an AI to write an email to a friend who then prompts an AI to respond, and you then use your AI to respond and your friend does the same, and so it goes in a vicious spiral towards insane irrelevance. Promise to write your own birthday card messages. And if I have to explain why, then I have failed in everything I've shared with you today. Look for primary schools where the students do not use digital devices. That way, our young children and grandchildren will experience the joy of using their hands and brains to learn and play as they should. Assert your displeasure every time you discover that an AI-generated creative work masquerading as human-created is thrust at you. Vote for politicians who care more about the long-term quality of human creativity than the short-term maximisation of national economic benefit. And attend uplifting, inspiring in-person festivals such as the Woodend Winter Arts Festival. Now, I am beginning to see hints that there might be an emerging backlash against AI. I'm seeing an indication that we humans will increasingly choose to live in the real world. We will seek live music. We will seek slow food restaurants. We will remember that AI is not actually human. It is a technology. We made it. We are in charge. We can switch it off. Or it may be that the AI companies will do themselves in on an overdose of hubris, like Icarus, who, despite his father Daedalus's warning, flew too close to the sun. The wax that held his wings together melted and he plunged into the sea and drowned. In summary, national governments, wherever you look, are moving too slowly or not at all. We are in an unusual position where citizen action can be the solution to saving us from the onslaught on our personal lives and the creative industries. The onslaught on our personal lives in which chatbots provide dangerous advice on suicide and murder and lead to psychological harm, such as body dysmorphia, will be challenged in the courts. In these cases, the AI chatbots are breaking fundamental laws in our society. Legal challenges and huge settlements became the first line of defence against cigarette manufacturers promoting their products. Likewise, legal challenges and huge settlements will become the first line of defence against AI companies that do not include guardrails in their products. Let's call this the lawsuit revolution. The onslaught that is undermining the role of human creativity in writing, filmmaking, the visual arts is difficult to negate. Proudly Human and other organisations like us, we will do our bit. To make an impact, we need consumers like you to look for certification of human authorship, and we need authors and creative artists to commit to human creativity in all that they do. We need as many of you as possible to be proud and hold your head up high. Let's call this the citizens' revolution. We need parents to choose schools that invest in teaching their children how to read, how to analyse and how to think. Schools that teach facts so that children retain internalised knowledge to underpin their critical thinking. There is almost nothing more important that parents can do for the future of their children. Now, if you're a grandparent like me, you don't get to decide. At the very least, though, discuss these objectives with your grandchildren's parents, your children. Let's call this the parents' revolution. With the combined effort of the lawsuit revolution, the citizens' revolution, and the parents' revolution, we will preserve what it means to be human. Thank you, and may the force be with you.
And may the force be with you, Australia's former chief scientist, Alan Finkel. And I wonder what you make of his solutions. Would they work in your mind? You can email us, bigideas@abc.net.au, or the Radio National text line 0418 226 576. That's 0418 226 576. On ABC Radio National and ABC Listen, it's Natasha Mitchell with you. Great to have your company today as Alan Finkel joins you from the Woodend Winter Arts Festival with an eager audience, and he's taking some questions from it next.
Thank you very much, particularly for some of the solutions. But when you say human authenticity, I struggle to disconnect it from human nature and some of those elements that are already being exploited by the companies. I apologise if I miss it, but the solutions were largely based on good intentions. And even at an individual level, we often want to save time, maximise our profit. We become uncomfortable with boredom and all the other human traits that let us down. And, yeah, I just wondered if I missed something.
In a sense, you didn't, but in a sense, you did. What you are not taking into account is my disparaging criticism of national governments who aren't bringing in regulations, rules, laws and everything that they should be bringing in to protect us from a technology that is pervasive in our society, has enormous ability to deliver valuable benefits, but enormous risks associated with it. I think of it like medicine. Imagine if medicines weren't regulated. It'd be a disaster. In America, they've got the FDA. Here, we've got the TGA. I'm not sure about the current version of the FDA, but traditionally fantastic organisation, as is the TGA here and the equivalent in Europe. And they're really smart. They understand that every new medicine has side effects, but what they do is they want to document and understand those side effects and determine whether the net benefits exceed the harm, the detriments of the side effects, and then with warnings, allow those medicines to go onto the market. And if they hadn't been doing that, we would not have the medicines that benefit us, because people would have rebelled against new medicines being thrown at them with side effects that in some cases far exceed the benefits. We should be benefiting from governments stepping up and regulating for our benefit, and then human nature isn't the driving issue. That's your question. What should be done, given that human nature is not always perfect? Our democratically elected governments should be protecting us, and in this case, they're not. So you are right. Everything I'm proposing and appealing to you in the audience and the others is based on a combination of human nature that you referred to with a bit of a dose of fear. Those students who are booing, those students who are responding to the survey saying, my gosh, I'm worried about what I would do with my life, what job opportunities I will have, what meaning there is, that's fear. So the combination of good intentions and a bit of fear of missing out is the best that I can suggest at this stage. It's a kind of citizens' revolution supported by the lawsuit revolution and the parents' revolution. Of course, they're citizens. I'm just playing on the words. But all three of those things are voluntary actions being undertaken by lawyers, by parents, by individuals, by creatives, in the absence of effective action by the Australian government, the Canadian government, the British government, the American government. Europe's got some legislation, but they haven't enacted the legislation, and the problem is here and now. So I can't think of anything better to do than to create a framework such as Proudly Human to assist in the information acknowledgement that enables people to do the right thing, but people have to want to do the right thing.
Maybe some words of encouragement. I've spent three stints in a psychiatric ward in a hospital over the last 6 years. I asked ChatGPT, how do I escape from the psychiatric ward? And I can't remember the details, but it wouldn't tell me.
Good. We'll treat that as a comment.
In relation to your three laws of AI that you mentioned, can you comment on the use of AI in the current warfare, or what's going on in the world at the moment, and the very sinister aspects of that and the results of that? How can you relate those two?
So I tried to frame the three laws a bit like a constitution, but a very short constitution, and it sets the ambition, and legislation and legal interpretation fleshes it out. But the first law is quite explicit, as I've phrased it, and AI may not harm or deceive a human being. Now, AI being used in autonomous weapons is absolutely harming human beings in the worst way possible, by killing and maiming them. So that first law absolutely rules out the use, if it was ever implemented, it's a guardrail, would rule out the use by any government of AI that has embedded into it those three laws. So I've tried to set them at a very high level. The fact that it says may not harm or deceive in that first law, the use of may not deceive covers everything I've been talking about. You can't be an AI that knowingly allows what you've generated to be promoted to other people under a pseudonym of a human being, or a made-up name of a human being, to get them to show interest, because that's deceiving them. So I have thought about the words very carefully to have expanded impact. Just to be clear, I'm not suggesting that we people or community legislation should be such that we are following the laws of AI. The intention, as Isaac Asimov created them for the robots, was that they built into the robot brain. My intention, they would be core guardrails designed into every instance of the AI. The Alan Finkel's three laws of AI are intended for the AI to follow, not to be, you know, spontaneously or not followed by human beings. And if the AIs have them built in a fashion that they cannot get around them, then they would protect us massively from the downside risks of AI, but still leave the benefits. I mean, just today somebody sent me an email with a link to a paper where AI has been used to develop a new vaccine against coronaviruses. Well, that's a good purpose. You might not like it if you're a scientist in the same field and you're being outcompeted, but overall, from the point of view of society, that is a good purpose to which the AI has been put. And I don't think the three laws, as I've articulated them, would negate useful implementation of AI in our society. The intention is to negate the risks, the downsides that we just don't want.
So once again, I'd like to thank Dr. Alan Finkel for the fascinating talk on AI.
He was Australia's chief scientist, a serial entrepreneur, former Chancellor of Monash University. Now Professor Alan Finkel is the founder of Proudly Human, a startup that certifies content created by people. This is where we're at, folks. Thanks to Ellen and the hosts at the Woodend Winter Arts Festival in Victoria's beautiful Macedon Ranges. I'm Natasha Mitchell, and I'll catch you next time for more Big Ideas.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.